Case is submitted. We'll hear argument next in number 886222, Scott Wayne Blystone against Pennsylvania. Mr. Gettleman, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. The issue before the Court in this case is, does the mandatory language in the Pennsylvania death penalty statute prevent a sentencer from making an independent determination as to whether death is an appropriate sentence in a given case? In California versus Ramos, in a majority opinion written by Justice Connor, she approved a far-reaching inquiry into the countless facts and circumstances by a sentencing jury, and she had indicated in that opinion that once an individual defendant becomes death eligible, then the jury can take into consideration a myriad of facts and circumstances which might warrant a sentence of less than death. In Pennsylvania, the Pennsylvania legislature has unconstitutionally, in my opinion, limited the types of mitigation that a jury can consider in determining whether or not there's mitigation. For instance, Pennsylvania only allows a jury to consider extreme mental illness or substantial impairment. But in this particular case, Mr. Blystone gave an extended confession to a police informant. And in that confession, he alluded to things like, well, it was thrilling to kill somebody, and you really don't have to be a bad person to kill, and alluded to aspects of the person's brain coming out of his head. Now, a juror who heard all this might think that this individual is mentally ill to think like that, to have no regard at all for life, but might feel that under the definition of Pennsylvania's extreme mental illness or substantial impairment, it wouldn't qualify because he might feel extreme would be locked up in a mental institution or taking Thorazine. And what happens is that he's not allowed to consider mental illness or substantial impairment in making a decision as to whether or not death is the appropriate sentence. The respondent had suggested that in the catch-all, number 8, the jury could then consider whether or not an individual is simply mentally impaired or simply mentally ill. But I think that that analysis is incorrect for this reason. When the Pennsylvania legislature wrote this statute, they included a burden of proof beyond a preponderance of the evidence, that there is a mitigating factor. So if the statute required proof beyond a preponderance of evidence that the
beyond a preponderance or proof by?
Proof by a preponderance of the evidence.
Thank you.
Proof by a preponderance of the evidence that an individual was severely mentally ill or extremely mentally ill, if it could be picked up in this catch-all, then that would destroy the burden of proof because the jury would no longer have to find it by preponderance of the evidence. In addition, the language of the statute is any other factor. And a fair reading of the word other would probably mean other than the first 7 factors. So a defendant in Pennsylvania who is just simply mentally ill, or who's a judgment was just substantially impaired, would be left with a situation where the jury could not consider that or give any weight to it in making a determination as to whether or not death is the appropriate.
I thought the Pennsylvania law allowed full consideration of relevant mitigating evidence.
It does, but what I was suggesting to the Court is this. Before that catch-all, it has a specific mitigating circumstance of extreme mental illness or substantial impairment. Now, if a jury, in viewing all the evidence, goes down the list and determines that he wasn't extremely mentally ill or severely emotionally impaired, he would set that aside, or she would set that aside and go on down the list to see if it fit in any other category. And I would suggest to Justice O'Connor that when they got down to the catch-all and it says any other evidence, a juror who was instructed probably wouldn't retrieve it back and conclude.
Don't you think that an attorney would argue on the basis of all of the mitigating evidence that came in, including whatever degree of mental impairment there might be?
Well, it's for a jury to give whatever weight they consider to any particular factor, and it could well be that amongst the 12, they might consider something that would be mitigating, which an attorney wouldn't have brought up. In this particular case, the closing, there was no mitigation presented by Mr. Blystone. The closing argument by his counsel probably was a minute and a half to 2 minutes because that was reflected upon one page of a transcript, and the basic plea was, don't execute. There was no argument vis-a-vis mitigation. And as I also had suggested, I think a juror who was told that there was a certain burden of proof that had to be met wouldn't go back after he couldn't meet that burden to just apply it like that. All the cases that the court has talked about in terms of Lockett, Eddings, Jurack, they all suggested that a juror should be allowed to weigh whatever is mitigating and give whatever weight he feels it should have to make a determination as to whether or not that outweighs.
I have some difficulty understanding how this argument relates to the question we granted certiorari to decide.
Well,
is whether the mandatory feature of the statute requires death when there's one aggravating circumstance and no mitigating circumstances is valid.
It does in this
case. So we're assuming for purposes of decision there are no mitigating circumstances.
Right, but the
argument—the
argument suggests that because of the limited nature or the limitations that Pennsylvania puts on the mitigating circumstances, that's the reason why there were no mitigating circumstances.
Well, that may be true, but I don't see how that's relevant to the question you presented in your certiorari petition.
Okay, well then let me just go right to that then. In Pennsylvania, the situation is that if there's one aggravating and no mitigating circumstances, then the jury's instructed that they must return with the verdict of death. In that particular case, there's no weighing, as had just been suggested in the last argument in North Carolina, as to the strength of the aggravating circumstance. I think in an opinion that you co-authored in Barclay, you had suggested that if the aggravating circumstances outweighed the mitigating but weren't so weighty as to require death, then the jury should be permitted to return with the verdict of life because it wouldn't have been the appropriate sentence. Also, in North Carolina versus Smith, you had suggested again that there's almost a constitutional right for a jury to exercise its discretion and return with a verdict of life, even though there might be more aggravating than mitigating when the strength of the aggravating is not such that would require the death sentence. In Pennsylvania, what happens is that if there are no mitigating circumstances, the jury is instructed that they must return with the verdict of death. They have absolutely no discretion at all. And it seems to me that this falls under the same problem as Caldwell versus Mississippi. In that case, the jury was told that it's really not ultimately up to you to decide whether the person's going to die. The Mississippi Supreme Court has an overview of that. In Pennsylvania, what they tell the jurors are that you really have no choice, or you have no discretion. The verdict is mandatory. You must return with the verdict of death.
Well, but Caldwell was at least in part based on the idea that there were wrong statements of law, misleading statements of law made to the jury about their responsibility.
Okay.
Here, it seems to me that when the judge says the jury tells the jury, you don't have any choice, they don't have any choice.
Right.
You say that's wrong, but I don't think it makes it a Caldwell case.
Well, it's only to suggest that in Caldwell, this court spoke about the awesome responsibility it is upon a jury when they decide whether or not to take somebody's life, and the fact that that responsibility is somewhat delegated by suggesting that it's Supreme Court could review that. In this particular case, the analogy would be that some of the responsibility for the jury in deciding whether somebody should live or die is being taken away from them when they're told that it's really not up to you. Once you find an aggravating circumstance, then you must return with the verdict of death.
Well, your argument then is that the jury must always be permitted, no matter what sort of facts it finds, to find in its discretion whether it's life or death?
I do. I think that the Eighth Amendment would suggest that there's a certain reliability necessary to make a determination as to whether death is an appropriate sentence. In Pennsylvania...
Well, what's this got to do with reliability?
Well, reliability in the respect that a jury really doesn't get to consider whether there's an... Just because there's an aggravating circumstance that death is an appropriate sentence, it's not a situation like had been suggested in the North Carolina legislature, where even though aggravating circumstances are found and no mitigating circumstances are found, the jury still makes an independent determination as to whether the strength of that aggravation is enough to warrant a sentence of death.
No, but I know Pennsylvania is different from North Carolina. But here the jury has considered all the mitigating evidence, I guess, by hypothesis, and found that no mitigating circumstance exists.
Well, I'd only like to suggest, and what I was trying to suggest to Justice Stevens, is simply this. It's our position also that Pennsylvania limits the types of mitigation that can be considered.
But that really isn't your question presented,
well,
is it?
Only in the respect that you had suggested to me Pennsylvania had already found that there was no mitigation. But I'm suggesting the reason that they found that there was no mitigation is because they were limited by the statute in finding that mitigation to engage in a weighing process. In Pennsylvania, there is no weighing process at all. It could be the most minimal of felony murders, and a defendant would be sentenced to death if the jury didn't find any aggravating circumstances beyond a reasonable doubt. So what I'm suggesting is that
any mitigating,
if they didn't find any mitigating circumstances that outweighed aggravating circumstances, the verdict would have to be death. Or if they found no mitigating circumstances at all, then the verdict would have to be death. And I think that it goes also in line with Justice Blackmun was saying about the dangers of having a mandatory sentence. The dangers of having a mandatory sentence are that you can't judge or evaluate the strength of a mitigating circumstance.
So in your view, I take it, if in Pennsylvania, and I'm not sure that this is the case, the killing of a police officer in the line of duty is an aggravating circumstance, you think the Constitution requires a system in which the jury can find no mitigating circumstances and then say, well, really, I don't think killing a police officer is a crime that deserves the death penalty. You say that that's constitutionally required, that the jury has that authority.
I think it's constitutionally required that the jury can weigh an aggravating circumstance to make a determination.
What about the case that I put? They find no mitigating circumstances, but some jurors think, well, killing a police officer in the line of duty is really not the kind of thing that we should impose the death penalty for. You think the Constitution requires that the jury have that kind of authority to second-guess the legislature?
I think the Constitution would require that the jury could look to that single circumstance to make a determination as to whether or not that was strong enough or the facts that went into killing the police officer were
Well, the facts are all mitigating circumstances under Section 8 of the Pennsylvania Code. I'm asking you, in my case, whether the jury could say that in their view, killing the police officer as an abstract matter is simply not the kind of crime that calls for the death penalty.
Yes.
All right, that's your position. It seems to me that that's exactly contrary to what we required in Furman versus Georgia.
Well,
and it seems to me then we've gone absolutely full circle.
Well, I would only suggest, Justice Kennedy, that different legislatures around the country have addressed that very issue. Obviously, North Carolina has, Florida has, Arkansas has, Nebraska has, and they all suggest that even when an aggravating circumstance is found, that the jury should still make a determination as to whether or not that aggravating circumstance is substantial enough to warrant death. I had suggested when I was addressing Justice Stevens that he had also suggested in certain cases that even though you find an aggravating circumstance, and he didn't identify it as either killing a police officer or any other of the enumerated circumstances, But he did suggest that there are cases where you do have aggravating circumstances and no mitigating circumstances, but the aggravating circumstances in and of themselves aren't so weighty or aren't so substantial that would require a death sentence. And if you do have a situation...
Because of the particular case.
And because of the aggravating circumstance and the facts that surround the aggravating circumstance. Because in the opinion that he authored, there was no evidence necessarily as to what the facts were of the aggravating circumstances. All I'm suggesting is, what was suggested in that opinion is, you can have a situation where you do have an aggravating circumstance, you don't have any you don't have any mitigating circumstances, but the jury makes an independent determination that the aggravating circumstances wasn't substantial enough to warrant the death sentence. And that's the only thing I was suggesting by that answer.
What was the aggravating circumstance in this case?
Felony murder.
I mean, what was the aggravating? What this was a robbery, was it not?
So it was a felony murder. The aggravating circumstance was a felony murder.
Was the robbery?
The robbery.
$13 robbery from the...
Right.
It wasn't felony murder, was it? It was murder in the course of committing a felony.
Murder. It's a first-degree murder in the course of committing a felony. When they found Mr. Blystone guilty of the crime, they, in effect, had already proven the aggravating circumstances. As a matter of fact, when the prosecutor closed to the jury in his in the sentencing phase, he had indicated to them that we've already established that a felony murder has been committed, and then he spoke about their duty to return a verdict of death.
Well, they clearly here, as I understand the statute, clearly had, assuming they didn't find mitigating circumstances, the fact that the defendant, rather than one of the other occupants of the car, stole the $13 from the victim is what not only authorized the death penalty, but actually mandated it. If there had been no, if he had not taken the $13, there could not have been a death penalty in this case. Is that right?
No, I think that if he was found guilty, maybe under Edmonds he couldn't, but in Pennsylvania, if he had been found guilty of first-degree murder as an accomplice.
But assume he had nothing to do with the robbery of the $13, then he couldn't have gotten the death penalty, could he?
Well, he could have as a co-conspirator. In other words, because he didn't actually take
assume
the money.
He didn't know, assume he didn't even know
oh,
the 13.
Excuse me. No, probably not.
So, not only probably not, the aggravating circumstance that authorized and also required the death penalty in this case was the fact that he was found guilty of the $13 robbery.
Correct.
And all the other facts are irrelevant to the all the other aggravating circumstances are irrelevant to the penalty determination.
Right, yeah. To the penalty determination, that's correct. I'd only suggest that the courts have indicated that there is a constitutional requirement that before a sentence of death may be imposed, it's the sentencer that must decide whether a death is an appropriate sentence. In this particular case, the sentencer is precluded from making the determination that death is an appropriate sentence in this case. Once the aggravating circumstance is found and no mitigation is found, then he has no say, and it's the type of mechanical, rigid process that the court suggested was inappropriate.
I guess I'm just repeating what Justice Kennedy suggested, but you're sounding like the opposition in Furman. Wasn't Furman directed exactly against leaving it up to the jury whether in a broad category of cases you want to impose the death sentence? And
Justice
here you're
Scalia.
Saying that that's really what we ought to do, leave it up to the jury.
Well, what I would like to suggest that in the Furman case, the reason that they spoke about unbridled discretion, it was because of the broad spectrum of people who were death eligible. And I think when they spoke about unbridled discretion or that kind of discretion which you had suggested to me, it dealt with situations where the pool of death-eligible people was too broad. And
that's not what they said. They didn't say too many people are eligible for death. What they were concerned about, quite the contrary, was like situations being treated differently. And what we were trying to develop was a system in which that kind of inequity, insofar as possible, wouldn't occur. And here Pennsylvania has created one. It says we decide what's aggravating if you find it, and if you find no mitigating circumstances, every jury should impose the death sentence.
But the problem with that is that that conflicts with the Eighth Amendment requirement that a jury should make a determination that under the facts and circumstances of the case, this is the appropriate decision. And in Pennsylvania, there's no way to do that, and there's no way to in any way measure the degree or the strength of the aggravating circumstance that would justify the imposition of death. I understand what you're saying as it relates to the unbridled discretion. I would only suggest to you that this court has held in various cases that in considering mitigation, for instance, that a jury could have unbridled discretion. Mr. Justice Stevens had suggested that also, that I think you have to make a distinction between the two. I know that. So, with permission of the court, I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Very well, Mr. Gettleman. Mr. Preid, we'll hear from you now.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, Pennsylvania's death penalty statute is not a mandatorily unconstitutional statute. It is a constitutional guided discretion statute. It allows the jury to consider all relevant mitigating evidence in making the decision as to whether or not to impose the death penalty. It is not the kind of statute that this court addressed in Woodson and Roberts and in Sumner versus Schuman where...
Except that they require or allow mitigating evidence to be considered. Why isn't it like Woodson? It's a direction to have the death penalty if a person commits a felony murder.
The evil, Justice White, in those cases was that the jury never got to make the individualized determination that they're required by the statute to make.
Well, except for the mitigating evidence side, I don't know why it's different from Woodson.
The statute in Woodson,
which is a big difference, I agree. But once they find no mitigating evidence, their discretion is at an end. Here's the crime. Here's our orders.
Well, there are two thresholds that the Pennsylvania statute requires the jury to cross before it finds that this is a death penalty case. The first threshold is, of course, given is a first-degree murder, and the second threshold is whether or not there is a valid aggravating circumstance which must be established beyond a reasonable doubt, unanimously by the jury, and then it must go further. The inquiry does not stop in Pennsylvania statute by simply finding that the aggravating factor exists, and that's perhaps the evil of some of the cases that we had heard from before, had seen before. In Pennsylvania, the jury must then consider, they are forced to consider whether or not there are any mitigating circumstances in the record. And if there are none, then they are, of course, obligated at that point, constitutionally, I believe, to come in with the death penalty. It is appropriate that at that particular stage, the post-consideration stage, that the statute takes its effect. The mandatory feature does not take effect in the beginning. It takes effect at the end of the reasoning process so that the result is a rational, reasoned, moral response rather than...
Yes. Do you have a bifurcated system where the penalty hearing is separate from the trial?
Yes, Justice Stevens, we do.
And if you had such a hearing, I take it you have the same jury, though, that hears both.
Yes.
If you had a different trier of the fact in the sentencing hearing here, would the evidence, there's some very bad evidence in this case. This is obviously a very mean person and had no remorse, and that tape recorder thing really makes him to be a pretty bad person. None of that would have been admissible in the sentencing hearing, would it? Because that's all irrelevant, because the death really was required as soon as they proved the $13 robbery.
There are three things that are required under the valid aggravating circumstance. It requires a murder.
Right.
It requires a robbery.
Right.
And then in this...
And no mitigating circumstance.
Well, if this...
Everybody agrees there's no mitigating circumstance here.
Therefore, all the other evidence about the real aggravation, the stuff that makes many objective people think this man may well deserve the death penalty, that all would have been irrelevant, wouldn't it?
Well, it would not be considered. It could not be considered because under Pennsylvania statute, the only thing that the jury can consider as an aggravating factor is that exclusive list. Certainly, there was a lot of aggravation there, but they could not consider
that. And it was all put before the jury.
It was put before the jury, Your Honor. There's no question about that.
And I take it if it had been a sentencing hearing as opposed to a trial, I suppose it all went to intent, and I'm not suggesting it was improperly received. But if you'd had a separate hearing on penalty only, that evidence would have been irrelevant, wouldn't it?
That's correct. It would have been irrelevant. But the point of the matter is that by having the jury consider only the factors of first-degree murder and robbery, and then they have to add the third element of whether that murder occurred in the perpetration of the robbery. That's not that's a step that had to be taken by this jury, and that's not a step that should be treated lightly. So in this particular case, then the function of aggravating is to narrow the class of death eligibles. And that's a good facet of Pennsylvania statute because it helps to reduce arbitrariness.
Well, in answer to Justice Stevens' question, I assume that if the state were trying to show there were no mitigating circumstances, it could introduce much of this evidence, i.e. to show that he was not acting under extreme emotional or mental disturbance when he went back and told his accomplices in the car that he was going to kill the victim and then discussed it with the victim for a while. I assume that is all relevant to show that there's no mitigating circumstance.
Justice Kennedy, that is correct. At that particular time, the prosecutor could argue to the jury that this was the product of a mind that was not extremely emotionally disturbed, that there was some relevance to that in rebuttal to an argument that might have been proposed.
They could do it in rebuttal.
Does it have to be in rebuttal? Can you, under this law of the state, as part of your case on direct in the sentencing hearing, show no mitigating circumstances?
You the state would show no mitigating means aggravating.
Does the state show absence of mitigating circumstances in its case in chief in the sentencing hearing?
No, it does not, Your Honor. It does not. The only thing relevant that the state can establish is whether or not facts establish a valid aggravating circumstance. And the jury then makes that determination whether they have been established. And the jury can, in numbers of cases, say no, that they haven't been established. It is then up to the defendant to proffer evidence of mitigation. The jury must consider it. It is not precluded by this statute from considering it and is not precluded from giving effect to that evidence under the Pennsylvania statute. It can do that through the various 8 categories that are listed as part of the Pennsylvania statute in which mitigating factors are spelled out. And this jury in particular was told what mitigation was. It said that something less severe. And these 7 factors, specific factors, and the 8 catch-all, E8, give content to just what mitigating is under the Pennsylvania statute. It gives the kind of guidance to a jury that a state ought to give in helping its citizens reach such a momentous verdict so that their verdict is the product of rationality and reason rather than emotion and unguided discretion so that we don't go back to the arbitrariness of Furman. This is precisely why Pennsylvania statute is in the center of all of the spectrum of statutes that cover the landscape in the United States. We're not in the extreme of unbridled discretion, as some of the statutes may be, or close to that. Nor are we in the other extreme, where a statute that requires the finding of death on the simple finding of first-degree capital murder without any consideration of mitigating. This statute provides a fair balance of the competing interests that are involved here, of arbitrariness, and it encourages individualized sentencing, and it makes the jury's verdict one of appropriateness and rationality, and that when their final verdict is in, it's the kind of case in which it speaks clearly that this defendant deserves the death penalty because of the aggravating factors here proven beyond a reasonable doubt, and there are no mitigating factors or the aggravating outweigh the mitigating factors that have been established. I would point out that the question before this court is whether or not Pennsylvania statute is mandatory, and the defendant again seems to walk away from it even here at oral argument. And I would suggest to this court that that his argument on whether or not there is a sufficiency of weighing of the aggravating or that there's insufficient consideration of degrees of mitigating has nothing to do with whether the statute is mandatory. If you took the must word out of there, the word that says that the defendant that the jury must find the defendant guilty, must impose the death penalty after aggravating are found and no mitigating or aggravating outweigh mitigating. If you took that word and put may in there, the problem would still be there because it's a Lockett problem. It's an Eddings problem. It's not a mandatory set. It's not a mandatory statute under those circumstances. So we really have to focus here, I think, on what the question is that's been asked by this court. And this statute is not mandatory because it permits the jury to consider all relevant evidence in making decision, mitigating factors. Just as this court has required, Pennsylvania has spelled them out. This statute came into being in 1978 after Lockett. Those factors are there because this court has indicated to the states that the juries need to be guided. We have taken the advice of this court, and the states have decided that this is the way that they have gone. There are 14 states that have similar statutes like Pennsylvania's. They have structured the mitigating to give it content. They have added factors in there that permit mitigation to be considered. In relation to the argument that the defendant makes that we ought to weigh the sufficiency of the aggravating, I'll address that even though I don't think it's relevant to the question, because there is no case of this court. Now, does the Constitution require that we weigh the sufficiency of aggravating? For example, your Jurek case, this court did not have a weighing process approved. There was none under the Texas statute. But the point to be made here is that Pennsylvania allows the circumstances of the offense. And that's all this court requires and that the Constitution requires is. And the real question here is, does the jury get to look at the circumstances of the offense? That's what the question is here. And in Pennsylvania statute, they are required to look at the circumstances of the offense as a mitigating factor, just as this court has said in Lockett. And it lists them, all of them, that the major, as this court has called them, the major categories of mitigating evidence. And then it provides an E8 that the jury can consider. And this is what the judge in this case termed it, a catch-all, that any other evidence of mitigation concerning the character and the record of the defendant and the circumstances of the offense are considered in mitigation.
The verdict of the jury, as the way it was announced in court, was that the jury unanimously found no mitigating evidence.
That is correct, Your Honor. We differ from North Carolina in that respect. And importantly, our court has interpreted our statute as not requiring a unanimity of finding of mitigation. One juror finding mitigation under Pennsylvania law causes all jurors to consider all of those factors.
But the verdict must
be unanimous.
But the verdict here was that they unanimously found no mitigating evidence.
That's correct. And the statute gives the jury the option to do that properly, so there may not be mitigating in a case. There are cases in which there are no mitigating factors. The defendant seems to want the statute to say, here's the evidence, and you must now find it, as if the statute should do all the work for him. He ignores.
What would the verdict have said, Mr. Preet, if one juror had found mitigating circumstances and 11 had not? Would the verdict have read differently than the verdict in this case?
Mr. Chief Justice, it certainly would. It would have read, we the jury find aggravating factors, and they must list the aggravating factor. So there's review by the
Okay, we know that, but let's...
Pardon me?
Aggravating or mitigating?
It would have to list the aggravating and spell it out what they found.
Yeah, but I asked you about the mitigating.
If they found one mitigating, they
would. If one juror found one mitigating and the other 11 didn't.
That's correct.
Well, how would the verdict read as to that aspect?
The verdict would read the aggravating outweighed the mitigating or the mitigating outweighed the aggravating. That's what the verdict slip would read. We are different, therefore, from North Carolina. That one juror, the concern that you had, Justice Stevens, would be able to give effect to his concern of the youth. He might think that the youth of that defendant was mitigating. He would be able to give it effect. He would be able to vote for the finding of youth as a mitigating factor. And if he did not find that the aggravating outweighed the mitigating would find life.
Subject, part of your brief on this subject puzzled me a little bit. It seemed to me at one time you were arguing that an aggravating circumstance can be some of them are not quite as serious as others, and that a minorly aggravating is really mitigating. Could the juror in this case have said that, well, he only stole $13, so that's mitigating?
Certainly, because he could have given effect to that evidence under, for example, E7, the defendant's participation in the act was relatively minor, or without a label under E8, where the statute reads, any other evidence of mitigation concerning the character and record of the defendant and the circumstances.
So in your view, a given circumstance can be both aggravating and mitigating at the same time.
It might be. They're certainly part of the same spectrum. For example, if refer the court to mitigating circumstance one, the defendant has no significant history of prior convictions, and then on the other side, an aggravation. There is number 9 that says the defendant has a significant history of felony convictions. However, it's limited to those involving the use of threat or violence to the person. So they're the same spectrum, and that is whether the defendant has any record.
Even taking out those words, in that one of your circumstances I remembered is prior conviction of voluntary manslaughter. That mandates the death penalty, but could you say that the defendant could say, well, that's really mitigating because he didn't intentionally kill, or it wasn't deliberate, or whatever the formula is to distinguish manslaughter from murder?
Certainly. Under that,
so under something the legislature has determined to be an aggravating circumstance that mandates the death penalty can be considered by the jury to be mitigating.
Certainly can, Your Honor, because he could introduce.
I'm not sure. Is it really the same circumstance? It seems to me the aggravating circumstance is that he stole money, and the mitigating is that he didn't steal more than $13. I don't know that it's the same one. I don't know the fact that he stole $13 as such. The fact that he stole is mitigating. The fact that he didn't steal more. I'm sorry. The fact that he stole is aggravating. The fact that he didn't steal more than $13 is mitigating. I wouldn't. You really want to concede that it's the same factor being used both ways?
What I was responding to, Justice Scalia, was Justice Stevens' point. That the prior conviction of voluntary manslaughter could be talked about as a mitigating factor under the Pennsylvania statute. And because the number one, for example, E8 says the defendant has no significant history of prior criminal convictions. He could say that is not a significant history, and so argue the point of his prior conviction.
In this not a significant history, even though it mandates the death penalty if it's
well. Justice Stevens, I don't think that it mandates the death penalty.
In the absence of mitigating circumstances.
The jury can consider whether or not the aggravating statute, the aggravating factor has been proven. The fact that he had a prior record of crimes of violence is what the aggravating factor is.
It seems to me that the manslaughter conviction would not be a mitigating factor. The mitigating factor is that he didn't have any other convictions beyond the manslaughter conviction. The manslaughter conviction is an aggravating one. The fact that he didn't have any others is a mitigating one.
Well, that's possible.
I don't know how
that construction is possible, too. I suggest to the court that the important consideration here is whether or not this defendant could introduce and present to the jury evidence that would mitigate concerning his character, the record that he has, or the circumstances of the offense. As long as he's doing that, I think that the Pennsylvania statute and the statute permits him to do that, and the statute permits him to give it effect through its broad categories. that that statute is constitutional. And it does it precisely in the way that this Court and Lockett and Eddings have said, and that is as a mitigating factor. Now, there may be something in the past that or about this crime that's mitigating, and he would have the opportunity to present it. Even about his prior record, he would have the opportunity to present it under this statute. He's not precluded from doing that. This is a statute that has been interpreted as a catch-all, a broad statute by our Supreme Court. And I would like to then turn to—
Mr. Attorney General, just a matter of curiosity, how many people are on death row in Pennsylvania?
There are 110 at this particular time, Justice Blackmun. This is the first time that this statute has been before the Court for consideration. We appreciate the opportunity here.
Have you had any executions up there recently?
The last execution we had was in 1962. The statute has been on the books since 1978. There have been no executions pending the outcome of this case. The important fact that I think also has to be remembered here in considering Pennsylvania statute, and petitioner makes the argument that the jury is precluded from considering certain kinds of mitigating evidence because the enumerated examples of mitigation use words like extreme and substantial. I suggest to this Court that in reality this is no limitation for it. It is the jury which makes the determination what extreme is, what substantial is in any given situation. And since these words alone, since the jury alone decides what these words mean, they do not restrict the jury. These words give content, as I've indicated, to what is meant by mitigating evidence. And moreover, any evidence that does not fit precisely within the category of extreme mental or emotional disturbance, for example, or that the defendant acted under substantial domination, any evidence that does not fit in that category is considered in the catch-all category, E8, is referred to as any other evidence of mitigation concerning the character and the record of the defendant and the circumstances of his offense. I think it's important here to recognize, again, the role of counsel in this process. This is not a superfluous role, that counsel has the opportunity to present evidence under Pennsylvania statute. He's not precluded from doing that. He's not precluded from having that evidence take effect. He doesn't have to put it under the label of extreme emotional disturbance. He can have the jury consider it in his by presentation of the argument under any other evidence, that broad category of E8. And that's, I think, what makes Pennsylvania statute a solid statute, that it well balances the competing interests here that the Eighth Amendment through the 14th Amendment requires of the states. The Commonwealth, in this particular case, has presented a statute to this Court for consideration that we do believe well balances those competing interests. It fairly balances
and
the two.
And yet you haven't really enforced it, have you?
Pardon me?
I say, yet you haven't really enforced it, have you?
Well, our appellate court is required under this statute, Justice Blackmun, required in every death penalty case to conduct three specific reviews. And those reviews take a considerable amount of time, and I think it's important that our Supreme Court gives consideration to these cases so carefully. It requires the Supreme Court to review the verdict to determine whether it is a verdict that is not based on passion or prejudice or some other arbitrary factor.
Of course, there are those, I think Mr. Justice Powell, among others, who have said if you're going to have a death penalty, you ought to enforce it. You have on death row a number of people equal to half of those in this room.
There are those who agree with that argument. However, I think it is important, and my duty as the Attorney General of the state would be to see that the laws are fairly enforced and to ensure that every consideration is given to the defendant before the power of the state, the vast power of the state, is caused to take effect through an execution. And so I support our Supreme Court in its careful review, and I support the process of appellate review. And I think it's important, too, that our Supreme Court looks at the aggravating circumstance. It's forced to look at the aggravating circumstances written down on the jury verdict, and it's forced to see if that aggravating circumstance has validity in the record. There is evidence to support that finding so that we also have another review on the rationality of the jury's verdict. And thirdly and lastly, I'm sorry.
Take place.
This crime took place in 1983. The defendant was tried in 1984.
So that it's comparatively recent compared to a lot of other cases that are pending across the country.
That is correct, Your Honor. And finally, under Pennsylvania statute, a comparative proportionality review takes place. And I think that the Pennsylvania statute has tried, the legislature has tried, given its sovereignty under the Constitution, to take the kind of guidance that this court over the years has set forth that should be taken, and we have implemented in a fair way. There are no further questions.
Mr. Attorney, I can't resist saying I think the state is to be commended for not carrying out executions until the constitutionality of the statute has been determined in the first case.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, General Preate. Mr. Gettleman, do you have rebuttal? You have 9 minutes.
My rebuttal will be very brief, Judge Burr. Mr. Chief Justice, and it would only be in response to just a couple of points that the respondent made. The respondent seems to suggest that it's all right for the jury to weigh the strength of the aggravation, but the way it's done is it comes in through the catch-all mitigating situation. In this particular case, before the trial judge charged the jury, he said to them that he was going to list everything that they could consider as mitigation. And then he went down the list and he suggested all the factors, the 7 specific factors and the 1 catch-all factor. But a jury would have no way of knowing that if they found a specific aggravating circumstance, a felony murder, by proof beyond a reasonable doubt, that they could then turn around and weigh that as a mitigating circumstance by a preponderance of the evidence under the mitigation. There is no instruction whatsoever, and there's no way a jury could even have intuitively known that it was permissible for them to flip-flop on a particular aggravating circumstance, turn it into a mitigating circumstance, create a straw man and weigh the two against each other, and then come up with a determination as to whether an aggravating circumstance outweighed itself or whether a mitigating circumstance outweighed itself. Another thing that the Commonwealth the respondent had suggested, that it's all right for a jury in Pennsylvania to consider just mental illness or substantial impairment, but that can be considered under the catch-all phrase. But in a similar vein as California versus Brown, when the court spoke about mere sympathy, well, you can't take out that word mere, and in Pennsylvania, you can't take out the word other as in other factors. And other factors would be other than the first 7. And if a jury who was going to listen to its instructions felt that the severity of the illness wasn't extreme or wasn't substantial, then they would be precluded from what this court has suggested that they have every right to do in Lockett and Jurek and all the other cases, is to consider any mitigating evidence and give it the weight that it believes it deserves in arriving at the formula as to whether one outweighs the other. And in conclusion, I think this court has alluded to and has specifically said through Justice Stevens that there is a constitutional right to have a defendant have the jury weigh the weight or the strength of the aggravating circumstance, even if it's weighed against itself, to make a determination that that's the type and the strength of the kind of circumstance that would justify a death sentence as opposed to a lesser included sentence. If there are no other questions, I have nothing.
Thank you, Mr. Gettleman. The case is